What are the trends that you are seeing in suspension and debarment across the contracting community? And then break it up over what you're seeing big companies, medium-sized and small companies, please.
Well, Francis, there's no question there's more of an interest now in suspension and debarment. Matter of fact, when I was still in the government, I was approached by the Department of Justice, who had concerns that the government was not using the suspension and debarment tool as much as they would like to see it used. And there's pressure even back in the 2007-2008 time frame to use suspension debarment more aggressively. And a lot of criminal investigators want to see it used because sometimes their investigations don't result in criminal prosecution. A lot of prosecutors will say, well, what you got here is interesting, but not good enough for criminal prosecution, so take it elsewhere. Well, elsewhere usually means the suspension debarment official at agencies. And historically, some agencies have not used suspension and debarment much at all. And I was rather surprised to find that HHS evidently has not used suspension and debarment at all, which is hard to believe. When you look at the amount of dollars that HHS spends, and their grant dollars are huge, and I think they've had a few issues over the years, and that strikes me as odd. SBA has had a lot of problems with misrepresentation, companies coming in saying they were small when they're not small. SBA has had one instance of using suspension debarment. So I can understand why certain folks in the government feel like it's not being used as effectively or as often as maybe it should be. I think that that's a valid point.
Let me hit upon a couple of those stats, because I think those are important to kind of set the scene, add some context. So this is from the Interagency Suspension and Debarment Committee, and this is from their 2010 report. So actually the 2011 report should actually be out fairly soon. But what they found was that agencies suspended 612 vendors, which is up nearly 200 from the year before. Now that's, to me, incredible. That seems like a huge increase. I don't do math very well, but it's like a third, one-third increase, go from 400 to 600.
Well, it's also, there's all, you know, how that old saying, numbers can lie. There has been a debate for decades about how these are counted, and I'm not sure in this case, but some agencies break it out by individuals. You might have a company and 20 individuals, but it's just one case. Some people would say that's 20-some cases. Where other people say, no, that's just one case with 20 individuals involved. So you get into, you need to make sure that apples and apples are being compared, because when I was in the government, I found that not always were apples and apples being compared. So first you got to make sure that you're counting the same every year.
Right, because with the mergers and acquisitions, you have bigger companies and more people involved. I mean, if you look at, for instance, there's some well-known cases that in the last year that have been suspended, like Booz Allen Hamilton, but they had one office that was suspended. So how is that can, you know, and then there's three or four people around it. So I think that's a fair point.
Right.
Debarment, real quick, has also gone up from about 150 from 2009 to 2010. There were 1,651 contractors that were debarred, and then 1,945 companies were proposed for debarment. That's an increase of almost 1,200 over the year before. So there's a more aggressive nature going on.
Well, I think that's fair to say, Jason. I think it's very fair to say that agencies are being more aggressive. No question about that. The exact numbers we can debate, but I mean, the trend is upward. No question about that.
You mentioned the politicization of the suspension and debarment process. If you come away from a contracting hearing on Capitol Hill, you would think that members of Congress, both sides of the aisle, would like to see companies suspended, debarred almost instantaneously. Is that a good thing, bad thing, that Congress is so focused on this issue? Does it not really matter one way or the other, do you think?
Well, Francis, I think generally it's a bad thing because it turns into automatic debarment. And I think automatic debarment is a problem. And the whole idea with suspension debarment and what's required by regulation is that it protects the government from risk. It is not to be used as a penalty. And what you see in these conversations on the Hill are senators and congressmen saying, I think these people should be penalized in more ways than one, and really are looking at suspension debarment as a penalty. For example, I'm very concerned about these provisions in, I think it's 7 appropriations acts in 2012. This is law. This is not a proposal. In 2012 appropriations acts, there is basically a mandate that if you as a company have been convicted of any type of felony in the last 2 years, you are automatically debarred unless a suspension debarment official comes in and makes an affirmative affirmative determination that you're actually presently responsible as of today and that you can be a government contractor. There is definitely a move towards automatic debarment on Capitol Hill.
Now, talk a little bit about what it means by convicted of a felony. So it could be part of your company was dumping something in a lake, and that's a felony conviction because you paid a fine, for instance, to say, yes, we had some illegal dumping by accident, or we had a problem with some part of our industry and, you know, industrial complex, and then we got in trouble. Is that type
exactly,
of felony?
Exactly, Jason. Anything. It does not have to be related to procurement or integrity. It could be, although people think, well, geez, if you're convicted of a felony, that goes to your integrity. And it may be evidence of that. But the bottom line is these statutes are also inconsistent. So some are talking about also state and local violations. Others, just at the federal level. You don't even have consistency among the acts. But what's significant is that GSA and DOD are covered by these acts.
And how do you deal with the fact that, is it the people, so like the CEO or the top five officials are convicted of a felony, or is it anyone in your company? Because something like sexual harassment could be a felony, or drunk driving, you know, a DUI or DWI.
Again, it varies. The laws vary. Some say it has to be the company itself that's convicted. Other laws, other appropriations acts say it could be the principals of the company. I don't think any of them are, it's any employee of the company. But basically, it's either the company and or the principals, and the laws vary in that regard. And guess what? For 2013, the proposed Appropriations Act have the same language, the same inconsistencies, and it does seem like Congress could at least make the laws consistent.
You mentioned some of the agencies use this process a lot more so than others. What drives that within the agencies? Is it just a willingness to go along with it, to make it happen? Is it a situation where some agency leaderships may decide, well, that's not just something we want to deal with?
Well, some agencies, the suspension debarment official is not full time. It's sort of like other duties as assigned. And in those cases, they have other priorities. Matter of fact, I spoke to one suspension debarment official who did use the term penalty, who actually did this sort of as another duty as assigned, who needed training, in my view, because they did not understand the basics that this is not a penalty. This is a protection for the government. And in the meeting I had with this particular official, he was referring to it as a penalty. That's disturbing.
There's a big debate among some people in the procurement world. I think people where you sit who are representing companies see it from one view, and I think people inside government have a different view. It's the protection versus the guilty until proven innocent instead of the opposite. One of the things I want to touch upon, two things. The first is the OMB put out a memo last fall talking about suspension and debarment, saying agencies need to basically put a official responsible for assessing the agency's suspension and debarment program, review internal practices, ensure award officials have reviewed the relevant databases. A couple steps the agencies must take. Are you seeing agencies implement this memo as OMB would have hoped or had asked for?
Some of this is tried and true. I mean, these regulations, the FAR regulations, have been in place for decades, and I don't think there really is anything new here that agencies need to do. No, I have not seen much discussion regarding
you don't
that,
see a person
memo.
Who used to wear multiple hats and now they only wear the one hat of S&D, or they've lost their other hats.
Have not seen any major changes. And most of the agencies that have full-time suspension debarment officials are pretty good at it, and they've been doing it for a long time. And you'll see that pretty much in the DoD world.
Let me talk about this other idea of the guilty until proven innocent versus the protecting the government. I think it comes back to one simple thing, due process. Is there due process when it comes to suspension and debarment? You're very passionate about this. Give me a sense of why you think that there's not due process.
I really do feel strongly about this. I felt this even when I was in the government, when I was working with suspension debarment officials. I was counsel to one, and it did occur to me that the regulations are fundamentally flawed. And yet no one is about to touch them because politically, if you did anything to tinker with them, it would look like you might be soft on contractors. But in a nutshell, Jason, here's the problem. With respect to debarment, with respect to proposed debarment, all you need, I could go home tonight and in the mail there could be a notice of proposed debarment there. And immediately I'm precluded from doing business with the government until that issue is resolved. It could be 6 months from now, it could be a year from now. And during that time, I cannot do business with the government. If I'm a small business,
quick,
I might go out of business.
New
in that
business,
time.
The current business that you have, you can continue on.
Yes.
Because that's very important, the difference, because if you're a big company, XYZ, who makes $150, $200 million a year, $500 million a year, that doesn't hurt them as much as that small business who maybe has three or four contracts and needs to replenish those often to get new business to keep themselves going.
Absolutely. And no new orders, no options can be exercised. I mean, so it does impact a small business greatly. I think that's remarkable that you have no opportunity to respond. You have no due process. There is no due process in the proposed debarment piece of this whole thing.
What effect has that had on the companies that you work with, Rob? What kind of an impact has that had on the way that they perceive doing business with the government and their enthusiasm about wanting to continue to do so?
Well, for the large companies, it pretty much goes with the turf, and they know that they're not going to be in a debarred status for very long, that an administrative agreement will be entered into by the parties, that they will be back in doing business as usual. For small folks, and let me tell you, for individuals, it's huge. And so let me give you an example. So here, one of my clients was an Air Force colonel who basically went home one night, opens his mailbox, and there is a notice of proposed debarment because of a investigation that had been going on for a long period of time, and it found allegations that he may have taken some Air Force folks to dinner while he was in the private sector. 7 or 8 years ago, okay, the alleged incidents occurred 7 or 8 years ago. He was proposed for debarment immediately based on the findings of this investigation. Well, he happened to work for a government contractor. He goes to his boss and says, I got this thing in the mail today. And they say, well, that's too bad, isn't it? Because we're going to suspend you immediately. We'll suspend you with pay for a while, but you're suspended. And if, in fact, you are debarred, you will be fired. And so here the guy, I mean, you can imagine what his reaction is. No chance to respond, no due process. He could lose his job. And fortunately, this has a happy ending that, you know, we did get this resolved prior to a actual drop dead date that the company gave him that, you know, you will, unless this is taken care of by a date certain, you're out of here.
It's interesting you bring up the due process, because two things that stand out from our reporting that we've done over the years on suspension and debarment. The first is from a hearing, and this is just a fascinating statistic. This is from the IG of the Transportation Department, Calvin Scoville. He said that it takes on average 300 to 400 days for an agency to reach a decision to suspend or debar a contractor. So they're working on this for some time. So if they're taking this long to make a decision, what point do they tell the person who's affected or the company, we're looking at this for a possible suspension? Now, the other thing is I want to bring up is that the Interagency Suspension and Debarment Committee says not only did they see in 2010 a huge increase in the number of suspension and debarments, but also the use of what they call show cause letters or administrative agreements or what's commonly known in the procurement world as a cure letter, meaning cure it or else. So are they using those types of procedures ahead of issuing the suspension debarment letter?
No, there are very few agencies that will issue a show cause letter, and I do think that's what they need to do. I mean, I think that makes an enormous amount of sense, and some agencies do issue a show cause. That, to me, is very prudent. That, to me, is the professional way to do it. What we're seeing is the notice of proposed debarment go right in the mail, and I have seen cases, Jason, where the process, you were proposed for debarment longer than you were actually debarred. In many cases, you could be proposed for debarment for 9 months to a year, and then they say, okay, we've decided not to debar you, or we've decided to debar you for 2 months. The proposed debarment process can take longer than the debarment itself. And here there is no due process. I do not think that the FAR regulations would withstand constitutional scrutiny. I really don't.
You mentioned this example of this gentleman who received a letter for something that had happened 7 or 8 years ago. Is there a statute of limitations on any of this?
No, because this is today. The question for the government today: are you presently responsible? Are you a person of integrity today? And it is relevant that there may have been incidents in the past that indicate you're not a person of integrity. And the suspension debarment official has to make a decision. As of today, are you presently responsible or not? They can consider anything.
So let me back up on that due process question, because the other side of the coin that someone could argue against your point about due process is the risk to the government is enough that they have to make a decision, because you're talking about taxpayer money, you're talking about government contracting, you're talking about the government doesn't want to open themselves up to this huge problem. So if they are proposing someone for suspension or proposing or suspending someone or proposing them for debarment, they are making a decision that the risk is high enough that something's got to be done now. Your take on that is what then? Because
That's it, Jason. That's easy to respond to. That's very easy to respond to because the regulations have something called suspension. And suspension is different than debarment. And suspension, the agency has the burden of proof of showing there is an immediate need, that the government has to protect itself immediately. That's fine. I mean, I think there are cases where there may be an immediacy and the government needs to protect itself. It has a suspension tool whereby it can immediately protect itself. Now, that often occurs when there's an indictment and there's been a finding that something may be wrong here, and you're actually indicted. Oftentimes, the agency will then suspend immediately because they think you may be convicted. We have reason to believe you might be convicted.
So the issue is not necessarily the suspension. It's the proposed for debarment piece.
Yes.
Because that is – if you're proposed for debarment, you're basically debarred.
Yes. Yes, you are.
So why aren't agencies using the suspension more piece? Because during a suspension, can you then still bid on contracts, get options taken up? And so forth.
No, no, no. I mean, it still has an immediate effect. You're precluded from dealing with the government.
So you're guilty until proven innocent.
Yeah, you are with an suspension. But at least with suspension, the government has to show immediacy. With proposed debarment, I don't need to show anything. I just have to say, hey, I read the newspaper today, and they said something bad about you, and I'm going to issue a notice of proposed debarment.
We're almost out of time. It sounds my synopsis of what we've talked about so far today, Rob, is that this is a delicate balance, and you think that the balance might be a little bit out of balance right now. What would get it back to where you would like to see it evenly balanced that would be equally fair for the government and for the contractors?
Well, I do think that Congress probably has to get involved because I think that's what it's going to take. And it's going to be hard, especially in election year. We're not going to see anything this year. And anything that's done, it's going to be viewed as being soft on contractors in a time when that's not politically correct. But I think the show cause letter should really replace the notice of proposed debarment. I think that would be the easiest solution, that agencies should be encouraged to use show cause letters as opposed to notices of proposed debarment.
And real thing, your view is also that things are going to get worse before they get better. I mean, you talked about the appropriate bills, but there's also the Small Business Jobs Act. There's also the House Defense Authorization Bill. Quickly, just give us a quick highlight of both of those.
Well, that's very important, especially for small businesses, because the Small Business Jobs Act said you were deemed to have made a false representation of the government if you misrepresent your size status, and you know the debate about this. Believe it or not, there are small businesses that do make mistakes because the rules are difficult and complex. Some small businesses don't intend to defraud the government. They actually make honest mistakes. That's too bad now because any misrepresentation is deemed to be intentional. In comes the House-passed Defense Authorization Act, and it says misrepresentation of size is an independent basis for debarment. You put those two laws together, and pretty much if you make a misstatement of your size, you're going to be proposed for debarment. It's as simple as that. And that seems to me to be a little bit aggressive.
So what's it called? The Keep Lawyers Fully Employed Act? Is that what you call it?
That's right. Keep us busy. Exactly.